So my name is Dominique Azalieu. I'm working for WCC and I'm involved in the Mobile Web Initiative. The talk will be about, I mentioned, the Mobile Web best practices, and I will start by explaining what my goals are for this presentation. I'm hoping you are all connected to the webinar system, and you should see the slide number 2 in front of you right now. So the goals for this webinar are to better understand the context of providing web content for users using mobile devices, to get a better idea of what needs to be taken into account when you develop content for the mobile web, and also to get a few leads onto how to put all these devices in practice. A few logistical points before we dive into the topic. As you can see on the lower frame of your browser, you should have an input box where you can ask questions during the talk. If your questions are for clarification regarding a given slide or a given topic, please make sure to mention the slide number in your question. Also, as some of you already know, we are using a web-based chat and an IRC server so that you can discuss any technical difficulties you would have, make some remarks during the webinar to exchange with the other participants. So the web-based interface is linked both from this slide and from the webinar homepage. But enough with these logistical details, and let's start to dive into this presentation. Let me first outline what we will be talking about today. I'll first try to introduce why these best practices were developed in the first place. I will then get an overview of the best practices, see how they describe the mobile web context and what you can learn from them, generally speaking, before actually diving into the best practices more closely and see more details what is the advices that they recommend. Once we get through this, which will be the core of the talk, we'll get a few leads as to how to put the best practices as they were described in applications, to tools, and documentation. And to conclude this webinar, I will present MobileOK and how this is the future, hopefully, of making the web mobile friendly. But let's start to discuss why these mobile web best practices were needed. You can see on the typical reaction of a user on the mobile. Typically, when a user is faced with a site on a mobile device, usually the experience is really not good. There are several factors for that, and we'll discuss which factors enter into this. But basically, I guess the first big motivation for these best practices were exactly this. We don't want the user experience on the mobile web to be as bad as it is today, and certainly not as bad as it is perceived today. Most users are quite reluctant to use the web on their mobile devices because of the difficulty they feel while using most of the favorite websites. So why is it so different in the first place to develop content for the mobile web? There are some rather obvious factors that get into consideration. I guess the most obvious one when you use your mobile phone is that the screen is very, very small. The screen size ratio with a full computer screen can be as high as 50. So imagine using your browser in a 50th of what you use on your laptop screen. and you get a good idea of why it is so different. And even on high-end phones where the screen size will be somewhat bigger, you still get a very limited screen estate. So that's definitely probably the most obvious change between the user experience on a laptop, a desktop, and a mobile device. Another important aspect, especially for very much interactive applications, is that the input capabilities of most mobile devices are much more limited than what you get on a desktop or a laptop computer. Usually the keypad is much smaller, with limited or no direct access to letters. Also, the pointing devices are much more limited. If you're lucky, you do get a stylus, but most of the time you'll get just some crude cursor system, which makes it very different from the usual experience you get with a mouse on a laptop, for instance. Something that most users will have in mind also when using a mobile device to access the web is the network access. The reason for this is double, really. First, the network access is often quite much slower than what it is on the usual network access computer, especially with high bandwidth network now more or less widespread in most developed countries, at least. The experience on a GPRS network can be frustrating, and that's because both of limitations in the bandwidth, but also in the latency, is the time needed before the request is made to the server and the response is actually sent, which is fairly high on a GPRS network. And more on the content developer side of developing content, the fact that the diversity of devices and browsers is so much bigger in the mobile world than it is in the regular computer world makes it much harder to know what kind of device your users will be using, what limitations you'll be facing, etc., etc. In the regular web, so to say, you would have three or four browsers that you really need to test because they would represent 95% of the share, 95% share of the market. But on the mobile world, it is very different. You get hundreds of devices and you get very 30 user agents currently well deployed in the market. But beyond these limitations, there are also very important factors that make the mobile world a very different but exciting part of the world to develop content. Well, the first thing is that the mobile devices as a communication medium is much more personal than a computer would be, for instance. It's quite frequent that which are a computer in a family or even in your business operations, that happens much less with a mobile phone. Also, the fact that they are mostly always on and always connected make them very useful to provide information when needed and where needed. It means that when you need it, it is with you, it is available. Very much not so in most cases for computers or even laptops that are much more difficult when you're on the go. Also, a very important point, I think, is mobile phones, even if they still are somewhat expensive, are much cheaper than than computers would be. And this means that both in developed countries, but also and maybe foremost in developing countries, access to these devices is and will be much, much more widespread than access to a computer is or will be. This is true that in some countries there are more users accessing the web on their mobile devices than on a computer, and all signs show that this is a growing trend. And I guess the point is that in the near future, most web users will actually be mobile web users. So with all these different factors in front of us when we started this mobile web initiative like WCC, it was clear that there was a need for a document which would exactly explain these difficulties I mentioned, also highlight the strength of the mobility that I also quickly introduced, and with a general goal of raising the awareness of web developers on the characteristic of this new medium so that they could better understand what they need to do when creating content that will also work well on mobile devices. And I guess the grand scheme idea behind this is that really the web on mobile devices is something too important to be ignored. As I said, in the future, we probably won't be talking about mobile web anymore because it will just be the web as most people understand it. So I'm hoping that by now you have a pretty good idea of why we developed these best practices. So the only question that I see, don't seem clarification, so that I will go forward with my presentation. So we will now start to get an overview of the best practices before we actually go into the details. So first, a quick note on the title of this document, which is actually linked from this slide, because I think it shows some interesting characteristics of the document. So the title is Mobile Web Best Practices 1.0 Basic Guidelines. So beyond the fact that these are best practices for the mobile web, I think it's important to note that in the first version, the 1.0 version of this document, which means that we are actually expecting to maintain this document in the future and probably to update the best practices as the market matures. So I guess the point is that best practices address the market needs as we know them today, but they probably need some update in a couple of years. They are also subtitled basic guidelines because we are really trying to address the basic understandings of your average web developer. We're not trying to get into too fancy development inside this document. We really try to make current web developers understand what they need to understand to make their content mobile friendly. So beyond the title, the document itself was developed by one of the Mobile Web Initiative working group composed by various actors of the mobile industry, content developers and browser vendors, etc., etc. So it does represent a fairly wide consensus in the industry. At this time, it is in the WCC standardization track at the status of proposed recommendation, which in WCC jargon really means that the document is almost considered a standard. There are still a very few process steps before we can definitely call it a standard, but in as much as you can be concerned, the document is final. It is composed of 60 best practices. We'll go over them in a bit. But I guess you can see that this is a fairly important number of advices that you'll need to understand. An interesting part of the document is that it was really inspired from various existing sources in the industry, from mobile web designer specialists and from browser developers, guide, etc. And also another important source were the web accessibility guidelines that some of you may be familiar with, and which explains how to make your content friendly for disabled people, and more generally for people with accessibility problems. And so if you already know these guidelines, if you already apply them, you'll see that the work you need to do to make your content mobile friendly would be much lesser as well. But beyond these best practices themselves, the document also explains the foundations that you need to understand for making sites that work well on mobile devices. And I will go over quickly some of these foundations which I think are really important to understand. The first thing that I guess some of you would be familiar with, but probably not all of you, is the notion of content adaptation. Really, there are two ways you can serve your content so that it would work well both on a computer and on a mobile device. The first way is the way that all of you know. It's just putting your content on a server and get the devices to access it directly. And so you would serve the same content to a computer and to a mobile device, or you would use two different contents depending on your possibilities. But there is another possibility, which is content adaptation. And the idea behind content adaptation is that the content as you author it is actually reprocessed by a content adaptation system. And the content adaptation system, based on the information it gets from the client that requests the content, will adapt the content to the capabilities of the device. For instance, taking into account the screen size. So one of the questions that we address in the document is how this content adaptation can be used, although this is not the core of the document, but more importantly, what you need to understand is that the best practices try to address both of these worlds, the world with and without content adaptation, by defining the best practices exactly to the content as it gets delivered to the end device. That is, we do not talk so much about how to author content, but how content as it will be delivered in the end should be. So that's a fairly important distinction, and I'm hoping you do understand what I'm saying right now. So an important aspect of content adaptation that I just mentioned is that it allows to take into account the diversity which exists in the mobile market today. So if you are using a content adaptation system, then it's likely that the vendor that is providing it knows about most, if not all, of the devices in the market. But we really very much wanted to make it so that you didn't need to use such a system to provide content. The reason for that being that not everybody can afford to use such a system. And even if they can afford, they may not have the energy or the resources to invest in developing content for such a system. And so the working group developed the idea of a baseline device, the idea being to be able to tell developers that if they didn't want to use a too complex system to deliver their content, or if they didn't know about the characteristic of a given device accessing their content, that they would have some baseline characteristics they could assume. And so this baseline device is defined as being the default delivery context in the best practices document, and basically it defines a few very important characteristics that you need to know when developing content for a mobile device. And the premises are that if you're not going to do any kind of content adaptation, you should take these properties as a basis for developing your content. And so I will go over these properties quickly. So we basically recommend that, not knowing anything better, you should assume that most mobile devices will support JPEG, GIF as images format, that they will understand UTF-8 as the character encoding for your content, that the markup they will be able to understand is XHTML basic. And as a quick note, we actually mentioned XHTML basic 1.1, which is the convergence of XHTML MP, mobile profile from OMA, and XHTML basic 1.0 from WC. We also define a screen width, which is based on some research on what's available in the market today. And so we define the screen width of the baseline device as being 100 pixel wide. We define the memory capabilities of this virtual device to be 20 kilobytes. So basically that defines how much content you can send at most to this baseline device. And we also advise against relying on JavaScript for this baseline device, as the current support for JavaScript is not very well deployed and not very interoperable in the market today on most mobile devices. A few notes on this default delivery context. I think it is a fairly important notion. Putting something interesting for web developers to know what kind of characteristics they can expect. But clearly, it's very much a snapshot in time because what is available today in the market is not what is going to be available tomorrow. And so we are expecting to revise this for the real context over time, and we expect that the working group will continue to refine it as well. Also, this is really the basic experience you can provide on the mobile web. It still remains that as of today, the best experience you can provide will be using some form of content adaptation with a third device approach, where you can rely on some of the well-known capabilities of the devices, like whether the device has a stylus or not, may change your mind about using an image map or not, for instance. So we recommend that you rely on the default delivery context if that's as much as you can do. But if you can invest some of your time and resources in content adaptation, you definitely should look into it. So let me check if we have some questions. Okay. That people understood well enough what I was talking about. So we'll now start the meaty core of this talk, and we will be diving into the best practices themselves. So as I mentioned, there are 60 of these best practices. I like to group them under these 10 principles and general design principles, and I will be going over each of them in the next two slides. Sorry. The first principle is design for one web, and I will be explaining shortly what this means. The second principle is to use web standards as they exist today. The second principle is a set of technical items you should avoid to use as much as possible for content on the mobile web, frames, value tables, and others. Then we look at what kind of things you add and maybe sometimes should use, but keeping in mind that not every device can use these technologies. Then we look at navigation, which is something very specific to the mobile context, where you really need to think well and hard about how you're going to organize your site. Then we'll give a few points on graphics and colors, talk about the size of your content, the net network access it requires. We'll talk also about forms and inputs in mobile web content. And finally, we will finish with a more editorial aspect developing the best practices. But let's first talk about designing for one web. So the notion of one web is one which is very dear to WCC, and it is the idea that you should be able to access the web from anywhere in the world, whatever your capabilities are, and using any devices. Basically, that you should not be cut from some part of the web just because you're old or you're disabled or you're in a developing country or because you're using a very small screen, for instance, which is the case that would interest us. And so the based on these principles, the advice that we give is that you really should try to provide a consistent user experience across devices. This may seem a bit theoretical, but this means, for instance, try to give your user the same kind of style and color scheme and the same type of content of information across devices. And which means that if you access your website on a given URI, say example.com, on a desktop computer, and then you go on your mobile web device, that you should be able to continue what you were doing on the computer on your mobile device. So the general principle really is try to make sure that you're not creating two web if you're developing two websites, but just one consistent user experience. We also recommend, as I mentioned before, and if you can afford it, to use as many capabilities from the mobile devices as you can. That also means that in some cases, you may have to work around bugs in implementations. For instance, if a device doesn't support well some markup construction, you may have actually to create invalid content, valid markup, which, as we'll see soon, something we tell you not to do. But if that's necessary for a given device and that you will be serving content specifically for this device using content adaptation, that then you may want to do. And also something extremely important that we advise content developers to do is to test on real devices. It is really good to test on emulators. You can find some of those on the web. But you really get the feeling that the end user is going to get only when you actually use a mobile device, because then you better understand the possible difficulties with user input, with crawling, with browsing. So that's definitely something we recommend you to do. Just to illustrate this one web principle, I've put two screenshots of my own blog. So that's the screenshot of how it looks on a desktop computer on the right and on my mobile phone on the left. And so you can see that I'm actually serving the same content. I'm trying to use a consistent color scheme. You can access both of those using the same URI, and I guess that's really what we mean by this one web principle. The second principle won't surprise you coming from WCC, I assume, is that we very strongly recommend to rely on web standards. As I like to put it, a good mobile web page is first and foremost a good web page. That is, it should really use valid markup, valid CSS, use a clean separation between semantics, structure in the markup, and styling in style sheets. And in terms of the markup language, as I mentioned before, the markup we're recommending is XHTML basic. You need also to take care of sending the proper character encoding declarations. So as you probably know, depending on the character that you need to encode, there are several options available, and we recommend by default that you use a Unicode encoding such as UTF-8. I won't go into the details of the encoding questions. They are fairly complex, but there are plenty of information on the international homepage, WCC. Also, something that you need to keep in mind is that when developing a web application, there will be errors no matter what you do. Page not found or access denied. You should really try to make sure that these pages are mobile friendly as well and won't lock the user application. Some mobile device is not at all easy to go back to the previous page, for instance, try to provide the user a way to go forward in the application and it failed in some way. The next principle is really a set of things you really, really don't want to do on the mobile web. Some of these are going to look quite obvious to you because they have been shown as usability disasters for quite some time. But it's very worth reiterating this, sorry. So, of course, you do not want to use frames on the mobile web, and the reason for that is global, really. The screen estate is so small that you don't want to have too much content separated in different flows in your page. And also the fact that without a mouse, using frames really painful. Most devices won't have pointing device, so you don't want frames at all. And tabular layout has been shown as something you shouldn't do on the regular web, but it is even more true on the mobile web because tabular layout creates some real difficulties within content for most user agents, and we'll see an example of this the next slide. Spacer GIFs, you know, these tiny, transparent GIF images that some designers use to pad their layout. Well, forget about them as well. They will take memory, they will take up bandwidth, they will create latencies, and just for nothing in the end, because the end user won't see them in any useful way. You don't want to use or to rely on pop-ups, because, of course, if you have a new window created in front of the current window, the end user will be completely lost when the screen estate is so small. And you also probably don't want to use image maps unless you know that the end device has a pointing system, because image maps without such a pointing device are really hard to use. So on the next slide, as I mentioned, just a quick illustration of why layout tables are evil on the mobile web. The screenshot is a screenshot of a fake website, but very much inspired from a real website that I had the displeasure to use quite a few times. And of course, this website used a layout table, and most user agents in these cases will try to linearize the table by putting it in a single column. And as you can see, this makes the two-thirds or three-quarters of the screen completely wasted in this case. And given that screen estate is so much of a valuable resource on mobile devices, in no case you want to be in that situation. So I just mentioned the thing that you do not want to use in any circumstance. There are other technical items that actually are not at all forbidden, but that you need to pay attention to. And so this would be cookies, this would be data tables, so not layout tables, but tables to present data to the user, scripts such as JavaScript, styling and font effects. And so what we mean by paying attention to them is that you should keep in mind that in some devices, these technical items won't be supported. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't be using cookies, for instance, and to make the user experience much more personalized. It may be something very interesting to use, but some mobile devices won't have any way to store these cookies, and you really don't want to have your users stuck just because the device doesn't support cookies. But what we're saying is that you should develop your application so that it works well with cookies, but it can still work, still be functional without these cookies. So this applies also to the other items I mentioned. So really the point is use them, but with care, basically. The following principle is attention. As I mentioned, screen estate is really one of the most important design problems in the mobile web space. And so the other day I was browsing the web to look for lyrics of Fran Berry's songs. I don't know if you know that as a group, but the fact is I tried two sites. The first site is on the left and the second site is on the right for the screenshot on the slide. As you can see, the first screenshot, the only thing I get when I come into the page is a list of links. I can download the MP3. I can go to other songs of this group. On the right screenshot, I get what I wanted. I wanted the lyrics, I get the lyrics. So guess which of these sites I would be bookmarking on my mobile device. Clearly, the second one is the most efficient one because on such a small screen, I don't want to have to go down this long list of links. And so really that's the gist of what we are recommending. You should provide certainly some navigation, but if you put it at the top, you should only provide the minimal navigation needed, link to the homepage and maybe one or two more links to contextual pages, but nothing more than that. You should also make sure that your text using the links are descriptive. Some devices do some clever things with link clicks, and you need to make sure that you're not using click here and download there just because if the user is only faced with the link, it won't know about what here and there means. You also probably want to use access keys. So access keys is a markup mechanism using an attribute that allows to bind a link with a given key. And so you probably want to use numeral keys for this access keys, just so that the user, for instance, can go back to the homepage just by clicking on the zero in his keypad. If you can, and it's not always possible with very much knowledge, but if you can, of course, try to use an easy-to-type address for your entry page of your site. As you know, typing URIs on a mobile device can be extremely long and painful, and so there are several technical developments in context that may help in the future, but right now it's pretty likely that the user will have to enter your URI so you can make it easy to type. And also browsing and going over links is not, again, as easy on a mobile device. So if you can, again, don't put too many links on a web page because the user will have difficulties to go all over all of them. At the same time, you also don't want to have only two links for a very big website or page, because it will then take a great number of clicks through before the user gets what it needs from your site. So that was for navigation. Maybe abuse points about graphics and colors, but I think it's worth reiterating them. You don't want to send a 1 megapixel image to a device that has a 100 pixel wide screen, because that's a way of bandwidth, and the user won't be able to make use of such a big image. So send images that are adapted to the device. Make sure to define the dimensions of the images in the markup itself, so that the content is not reflowed when it is finally downloaded, because it poses some confusion for the user. Make sure your images have the alt attribute defined. As you know, this attribute describes a text equivalent of the image. And it is very useful while you're loading a slow connection as well, to see whether this or that image is something you need to download, for instance. You also need to take into account that color rendering on mobile devices can be not as good as on other devices, and you can be lighting conditions that are not as good also as of a so use twisted colors and not put text in front of a background image that will make it unreadable. So again, related to the table layout question, you want to optimize that is used, and so the way is to give CSS and in your markup rather than absolute in Azure, such the layout is much more difficult to render for most user agents. Sounds like personal advertising, but I actually worked on making my blog only weeks ago, and before then I was a very nice but very big image to any devices that would connect the blog. Also, this full screen, as you can see on the left of the slide, title of the page, and a big image reduced. This was a waste of bandwidth, this was a waste of screen estate. And so I applied these very same best practices I'm looking today, a log, and the end result is, I think, at least somewhat better. If you get the my blog, a clear title, you're not downloading this big image anymore, and you still have this experience as I mentioned before. I guess one of the motto of developing content for the mobile web is small people. Of course, mentioned networks on a device can be slow, costly, expensive. Actually, the notion that going to a website is going to cost a lot of money is one of the things that make users refrain from using the web on their mobile devices. And clearly, what you want to do to keep your users, at least today, is to keep your content small in size. So you want to optimize your markups by not wasting bandwidth with white spaces as much as possible. Also, optimize your site sheet sizes. Make sure that you're not sending huge pages to the device. So the baseline device that we define, as you may remember, has a 20 kilobyte memory limitation. You also want, as much as possible, to avoid anything that will make the content scroll both vertically and horizontally, because that's, again, quite painful on the mobile device. Just a screenshot of the site I showed you earlier, a very displeasing phone book site. In this case, it is still loading, and you can see it is already loading 100 kilobytes. As a matter of fact, it takes 300 kilobytes to load. And you need to understand that in a GPRS network in Europe today, in average, it would cost for 100 kilobytes, €1. Imagine paying €1 each time you would be going to a website. You wouldn't like that. In the same idea, but a bit more general, you do want to be cautious with using the network web page. This means not only sending small content, as I mentioned, but also trying to limit the number of external resources embedded in your pages, such as images or style sheets, scripts, or even objects. Because beyond the fact that they will take additional bandwidth, they will also need an additional request to be got from the server, which means they will add latency to the total downloading time of your web page. In the same idea, you want your content to be cacheable. As you may know, HTTP has a very well-defined caching protocol, which allows the server to tell how long a given page, a given image can be kept in cache. And so if a user go back to your website 2 weeks after the first time it went there, if your image is still in memory, then the page will be loading much faster. So for instance, you do want to make sure that at the very least your images are cacheable. The same idea, you do not want to use a markup-based redirection and also try to avoid markup-based auto-refresh. So markup-based redirection will make the user download the web page just for it to be redirected to some other page, which is quite a waste and, again, adds latency. And if you're using an auto-refresh, as you know, you can do that not necessarily supported in all user agents, but using a meta tag in the head of your document. But if you do so and the user is not aware of that, he may be hitting the server and the network again and again and be quite displeased that you took his money for something that he wasn't aware of. So something that you need to keep in mind as well. On the right side of the slide, just a few figures of what it takes, for instance, to use CNN.com as it is served on a mobile device. It takes a total 500 kilobytes, which costs roughly €5 in Europe, and it would take 2 minutes of downloading time, including 1 minute of latency, because of the huge number of and images that are loaded on this page. Of course, no user is going to be waiting 2 minutes for a web page to be downloaded. I mentioned before that the input capabilities of most mobile devices is much more limited than what you get on a desktop or laptop. So you do want to pay a lot of attention to the way you will use any user input mechanism. That means mostly forms. Just a quick example on the right side of the slide. Rather than asking the user to enter his or her country using an input box, you probably want to use a drop-down menu. And if you do, you also probably want to provide the most likely entries at the top of the drop-down menu rather than serving directly the full 200 list of countries the menu, just because even going through this drop-down menu is not necessarily going to be easy on a mobile device. That's actually something that applies generally as a usability advice, but it gets even more important the mobile web context. Finally, and this will be the last principle for these best practices, is to remember that you're targeting users that are very much likely to be on the go, on the move. That means they will be accessing your site because they need the information where they are and at the time they're requesting it. They won't want to scroll through many web pages. They won't want to read very long sentences and with a lot of a side text. So I guess the idea, especially if you're going to build a mobile specific site, is to provide very centered content, very targeted pages, to use a title that will be short and descriptive. For instance, if the user bookmarks your page, he needs to be able to identify quickly what it is and what it says. And also try to design your site and your application with in mind the fact that the user will be looking for information in time. So I just went through these 10 principles, which basically summarize fairly well these 60 best practices. And you may be thinking right now, oh my God, what set of constraints is that? How am I going to build anything with so many limitations? Well, I guess I wanted to finish this overview of the best practices with a positive message. I really think that the mobile web is the future. And I think the fact that you're attending this webinar shows that you're interested into it and that you see the potential of this medium. And I think it is time for you and for us all to be creative within this constraint. I like this quote from the American architect Frank Lloyd Wright. Man built most nobly when limitations were at their greatest. That means when you do have these constraints, when you need to be creative, you need to put your imagination at work to actually create content that will work well on these mobile devices. And I guess that I'm really trying to invite you to make sure of this creativity and to design new ideas for the mobile web while we work with the industry to try to overcome some of these limitations in the future. So that was the list of best practices. Let me check the question. So I don't have much time, so I will just be taking a couple of them. Gaspar Nuno is asking whether the images should have width and height defined in the markup, the image tag, and that's exactly what I was recommending. Sorry for my ill pronunciation, is asking about support for external and internal CSS. We do recommend to use external CSS by default because they can be cached and the browser won't have to go through downloading it every time, but it may vary depend on the device you're targeting. So I may go back to some of these questions later. I want to go through this webinar, so that will be it for now. So we've seen the principles of these best practices, and I want to give you a few leads as to how to put this in application. So the first thing, if you already have a website that works on a desktop computer and want to make it mobile friendly, the first thing you will be wanting is to know what you need to fix, what needs to be modified. So we've been developing in WCC and European project what we call the Mobile Web Best Practices Checker. I assume that most of you are familiar with the WCC HTML validator, which basically takes a web page and tells you where your markup is not following the specification. Well, the best practices checker follows the same idea. It will take a URI of the web page and gives you a report of what's wrong with the web page based on the very same best practices I just talked about. So it will try to detect a table layout. It will try to tell you which markup language to use if not. You're not using the right one. Will tell you the total size of your page to evaluate what you need to reduce, etc., etc. So there is a screenshot of this checker on the right-hand side of the slide, and you have a link also to the checker itself. So if you you're starting to work on making your site mobile friendly, I certainly do recommend that you use this tool. I also need to mention that it's an open source project, so if you want to contribute to its development, you'll find more links from the checker itself. So the checker tells you what's wrong, but the working group has also been developing what we call implementation techniques, that is, small recipes on how to fix what is wrong. And in fact, from each of the error reports from the checker, you'll find a link to these implementation techniques. There is mostly at least one technique for best practice, and we have tried to develop some of these for various languages for developing an application, a web application in Java or PHP, or if you're serving static content with Apache. So the content in these techniques is organized by technology and by best practice so that you can find your way through this. And also something that I think is really, really important for you, these techniques are developed in a wiki, which means that not only you can consult them, but also, and we very much encourage you to do so, you can contribute to them. That is, you can either correct an existing technique if you find something wrong, but even more importantly, if you have your own recipes that helps creating sites that work well on mobile devices, please do feel free to add the new pages and explain how you follow these best practices in real applications. So please do go to these techniques, consult them, read them, but also write them as much as you can. Also, I've been talking earlier about how you could be using a content annotation system to do most of the work for you, and that's definitely one of the options you should consider early on if you're considering targeting the mobile web. But even if you do not go as far as that, some content management systems start to have mobile-friendly output, either natively or through plugins. And we expect this will only be even more so in the future. And so if you're already using a content management system, you probably want to look up if such a plugin is available. And I just learned recently, for instance, that the mobile plugin for WordPress was made to pass all the tests defined in the best practices checker recently. So if, for instance, you're using the WordPress blog engine, it is fairly straightforward for you to get some mobile-friendly output nowadays. So we just saw a few ways to put the best practices in applications. I want to conclude this talk with a look at where we're heading with the Mobile Web Initiative, and especially in the best practices working group. We have started to work quite heavily on what we call the Mobile OK mark. And so this mark basically is a way for content developers to advertise that their content is conformant to the best practices. So you probably all have seen these little icons that some developers put on their web page to say that their web page is HTML valid. So the Mobile OK mark is a bit like that, but not exactly like that. The idea is that as for HTML validation, you would need to pass a set of well-defined tests, and that's a gist of being Mobile OK, for instance, not using face or gist, not using frames, and so on and so forth. And based on the results of this test, what you would get is not only an icon, but more importantly, some matching readable labels that you could bind to your page, and that search engines and browsers and content developers will be able to use. And for instance, to filter in search results the fact that your page is mobile friendly, which means that you would get a much higher visibility when the user is looking for a given term on his mobile phone through this filtering. So that is certainly a work in progress. We released just last week the first draft of Mobile OK Basic. So Mobile OK Basic is the mark that will be granted just by running your page through a tool, because all the tests that are defined in this mark will be machine tests. I guess I do want to ask you to look at this Mobile OK document. It is not at all ready yet. We just started release it publicly, as I mentioned. But we're looking for feedback, and we're especially trying to see whether we're setting the bar for getting the Mobile OK NAS too high or too low. So please go and look at this document. And so that's about it for this webinar. On this very last slide, I've put links to the most important points I mentioned. So of course, the best practices document itself, the best practices working group, where you can find your own blog and links for other documents, the Mobile OK Basic I just mentioned, and the best practices checker, which I think you should really have a look at if you get a chance. And so let me go back to the questions. So we are at the top of the hour. Sorry. We are at the top of the hour, so of course if you need to go, feel free to do so. But otherwise I'll try to get back to the questions that were asked during the presentation. Before you go, just let me tell you, we will be sending a feedback form shortly. So please take a few minutes it will take you just to let us know what you thought about the webinar and what things you think we could improve and what other topics you would like to see addressed in this mobile webinar. So Paul Finn is asking about SVG being supported or not. So some devices start to support SVG. I have to say that we wish many more would. At this time, what we say is that you should not assume SVG support the default delivery context. That is, if you're doing content adaptation and you know that some of the devices are targeting support SVG, by all means, use it, because it is much smaller, much more powerful. But if you don't know, don't assume they do, because most won't. Schwartrat is asking again, what is the better solution? Either building a special section for mobile or change the original page to fit the mobile device? I guess it's really a matter of finding the need of your audience, really. If you can provide very mobile specific content, and that you have the resources to maintain both a mobile friendly version and a regular version, then you probably should do that, because as I mentioned before, the context of accessing the web to mobile devices or can be quite different from the regular web. But even if you do so, you should still allow the user to go back and forth between these versions, because again, you don't want to over constrain the user experience. But if you're mostly providing information, if you want to put your personal page, your blog on the mobile device, accessible on a mobile device, then I would recommend just having a single version and making it fit nicely on both mediums. And you can do quite a lot of neat things in CSS, especially with CSS media type. This is better described in the technique. Mike Hess is asking about CCPP and UAProf and whether they are still viable to sending device capabilities to the adaptation server. I will quickly introduce what CCPP and UAProf are for those that wouldn't know. CCPP is a general protocol that allows a server and a device to tell, well, that allows a device to describe its capabilities to the server, which means that if you're building a dynamic application, you could, for instance, adapt the size of the screen to the size of the size of your images to the size of the screen. Sorry. And UAProf is a particular usage of this protocol that was very much defined for the mobility context. And so they are still viable. If you've been using them, you may know that UAProf has some problems in that some of the profiles are not really descriptive of the current reality. And so the Mobile Web Initiative has another ongoing work item in the device description working group, which is basically building a repository where we are hoping to see many of these fundamental characteristics, such as screen size, memory limitation, etc., described in this repository so that content developers could rely on this data with a well-defined protocol to keep the data up to date with a defined process as well, with some reliability requirements. And so this is not quite ready yet, but this will be a very nice complement to what UAProf allows to do today. Philip is asking about mobile OK and how to make sure that people won't be using fraudulently. So this is, again, mobile OK is still a work in progress. For mobile OK basic, the idea is that, as I mentioned before, it will be fully machine testable. It will be fairly easy for content, or anybody who would be relying on this mark to test on its own whether the content developer does indeed pass the mobile OK mark. And so there are already a very well deployed trust mechanism when you can actually check by yourself easily that the content developer was lying or not, basically. So it should be, there won't be a defined mechanism for this trust because we think that, for instance, search engine vendors have their own trust mechanism, but it will be easy for them to make sure that mobile OK is really mobile OK. Ali Zaidi is asking about how a user use access key on a mobile on the mobile web and on a mobile device. So when you're using a mobile device and on a page that has access keys, you still have in most browsers the discovery problem. So if you know about access keys, currently most browsers don't tell you when a link is bind to an access key, so you still need to make it clear to the user that there is indeed an access key bound to a link, for instance, by putting it next to the link. But once this is done, once the user knows that he can rely on his access key, especially if the access key is numerical, then he will just hit the numerical key and the user agent will be following the link as is, which is extremely convenient, especially if there are many of these things and you want your user to go quickly to one such a link or even to a web form control. So basically it's a very nice shortcut and so you should use it for the most prominent links or navigation or your so Matt Lee is asking about the fact that their website is currently XHTML 1.0 strict in a content management system and whether they should be doing user agent sniffing to serve different content based on whether the device is mobile or not. So that's a fairly difficult question. What we're leaning toward to right now is to say that you can still keep your XHTML strict doc type as long as your document is still conformant to XHTML basic. The point of being conformant to the XHTML basic DTD is that you're sure you'll be only using markup structures that mobile devices support. And that's basically the main goal about this restriction. And so as long as you keep to this XHTML basic element, then you can keep your current content, provided that it fits the other limitations. As I said, the general decision about going with a specific mobile version or not very much depends on your audience and on the use cases that you would define for your mobile site. Amir Abbas is asking about the slides. So they are linked from the webinar homepage. I'm hoping that someone will be able to paste the URI on IRC. Ali Zaidi is asking about displaying a large image so that it changes size. While there are actually techniques to make it happen on the client side, we very much recommend not doing so because you don't want your user to be downloading very big images just so that they be scaled down on the device. And there are several reasons for that. The most obvious one is that it is going to waste a lot of bandwidth, which means that it is going to cost the user much more than it needs. And also, it will require CPU, and so battery on the mobile device to be doing this scaling down. And again, that's not something that you want to do. So again, the best solution is to do content annotation on images, which in many ways may be easier than doing it on the pages themselves. But even if you don't do this, I guess the general advice would be send small images and if needed, to use CSS techniques to do image replacement based on the CSS media type. And if you just send small images, of course, you can still link to bigger version of the images. For instance, if you want to show the user a photo just so that he can get a better view of what you wanted to show him in the first place. So Nandor Teremi is asking, for which types of web content is it useful to load up in a mobile web site? I'm not sure I fully understand the question. I guess, we wish we could give you all the answers, but the work on making a web content mobile friendly is very much a usability work. And as you say, the first thing you need to do when doing usability is to focus on the user. And so what I would recommend if you're starting to look at making your mobile website, your site mobile friendly, is to really consider what the user is going to be looking for on your site when using a mobile device, when he will be on the go, and what you can provide him as service or as information in this context. And so I guess I can't answer generally the question of what you need to provide, but really the idea is to be reminding of this context. And so I think this was the very last question that was asked to the interface. So I guess I'm going to thank you all for coming. I hope you now have a better understanding of the mobile web in general and of the best practices more specifically. If you have any feedback on this webinar, on the checker, on the slide, please let me know. My email address is available on the webinar homepage. Very simple, dom@wt.org. I can't promise that I will answer everything very quickly, but I'll try to answer everything as soon as possible at the very least. And so again, I will be sending a feedback form on this webinar. We'll be also holding other webinars on this topic, but in other languages, and also on other topics related to the Mobile Web Initiative. So again, thank you all for coming. I hope you learned things, and maybe the next time. Bye.